You're listening to the DonationCoder.com audio radio show podcast. Continuing with our Getting Organized experiment, this month we have an interview by Jose Quesada of Mark Forster, one of the foremost experts in time management and productivity. And so let's go right to the interview.
This is Jose Quesada from AcademicProductivity.com and DonationCoder.com. And today I'm interviewing Mark Forster, who is here with us today. Today in this interview, we're going to concentrate on his latest book, Do It Tomorrow, Another Secrets of Time Management. So, Mark, what do you think if we start with the distinction that you make between the reactive and the rational brain? Because I think this is a very interesting concept.
Yes, it's by no means original to me, of course. I think it's been known to scientists for quite a long time. It's the way the brain is organized. And, of course, it's grossly oversimplifying because the brain is a very complex organism indeed. But it is true that one of the reasons people have so much difficulty doing what they want to do is because they've actually got these two brains in their head pulling in opposite directions. And part of the secret of doing anything you want to do is to get them to pull in the same direction. Mm-hmm. Now, the example I give in the book is, if you think of the rational brain as being like the government, and the irrational brain, the reactive brain, being like the population of the country, the government makes rules, but no one would take the slightest notice of what the government was saying unless the government had all the structure, like the police, the courts, the income tax inspectors, the health and safety inspectors, the army, the navy, etc., 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 all those things, to provide a structure which actually keeps people doing what the government says, more or less, anyway. Because if the government didn't provide that structure, no one would take the slightest notice of what it said. And it's exactly the same with our rational brains. Our rational brains are trying to control a very complex organism. And if the brain doesn't provide a structure which will keep that organism going in the right direction, it's just not going to take any notice of what it says. Now, we see that every time we go on a diet. Our rational brain says, I mustn't eat sweet things, I must eat only so many calories a day, I must only have three meals a day, I mustn't snack, etc., etc. And the irrational brain is going, I want that chocolate cake, I want that chocolate cake, I want that ice cream, I want to, and so on and so on. And so it doesn't matter what rules we've made, our irrational brain, our reactive brain, is going to ignore it, unless we can provide a structure which will keep it in place.
And then the example that you use in your book is to say something as simple as, okay, I'm not going to write this article right now, I'm just going to put it on top of the table and look at it, or something as simple as that, and that is enough for the reactive brain to release the pressure and stop seeing that action as a threat, right?
Yeah, there's all sorts of ways we can help to keep the reactive brain under control. And we have the great advantage that our rational brains are rational. They can think up strategies. But the problem is very often people don't actually bother to think up the strategies, and so the reactive brain has it all its own way. So in the case of the diet, which I just mentioned, there are all sorts of ways which you can provide a structure which will keep you much better towards the diet. So for instance, you might involve your friends and your family, you might get yourself sponsored to lose weight, all those sort of things are providing a structure which make it easier, much easier to keep to the diet than if you're just depending on willpower alone. Willpower is never very good on its own. Mm-hmm. Another way which you can control the reactive brain is the one you mentioned, that when an impulse pops into your head, whatever that might be, you can write it down.
Right.
And that immediately forces your brain to switch modes into the thinking mode, the rational mode. Another method which the rational brain can use is to lie to the irrational brain. And that's something I talk about in one of the chapters in the book, that you can actually, if you're procrastinating about something, it's very often because the reactive brain regards it as a threat. And if you tell the reactive brain that it's not a threat, it will tend to believe you. So if you say, I'm not really going to write that report now, but I'll just get the file out, well, you know that you intend to write the report, but your reactive brain, and because it thinks, oh, phew, we're not going to write that report after all, it takes the resistance off. And then you can get writing.
Right. I really like this idea because I think it has a very good background in terms of what we know in cognitive science about the division between a conscious mind and an unconscious mind, or implicit mind. Let's see. Should we go to the next chunk of questions, which will be revolving around buffering and the central idea of the book about Do It Tomorrow. So why is it so important to make a buffer between what you are planning to do and the day you are going to do it?
Well, the example I quote in the book is I make this little story up about the two garages, the two auto repair shops, Joe Slob and Mick Cool. Mm-hmm. And the example is with Mick Cool, people ring him up, they call him on the phone, they just bring their cars in any old time, and he tries to please everyone by reacting immediately. The trouble is that there's so many people contacting him that to react to one person, he has to drop what he's doing for another person. So none of his cars ever get properly serviced. They're all just hanging around, partially dismantled. And therefore, although he's trying to please everyone, what actually happens is that he gives a very poor service because he's constantly breaking off what he started in order to start something else. And that's very similar to the way a lot of us work in offices. We're constantly getting phone calls. The boss comes in and dumps some papers on our desk. One of our colleagues asks us for a favor. The clients call us and want us to find out some research, whatever it may be. And we suddenly remember we've forgotten our wife's birthday, whatever it may be. There's a constant stream of stimulation coming in. And if we react to it, if we react to each one as it comes in, the result is that we're constantly jumping from one thing to another, and nothing gets done properly. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think of Saturday night in a pub, in a bar, we've got a big crowd at the bar, and they're all trying to get served drinks. And the very loud and assertive person gets served drinks because they attract the attention of the bar person. But the poor little shrinking violet like me has to stand there trying to get a drink for about 2 hours because other people are just elbowing their way in front. So our office life is a bit like that. It's the things which have got the not making the noise, you've got a big presence which get dealt with, whereas the things which are not making a big noise tend to get left and not actioned. And that's a very bad way to behave because it makes our day very fractured, and it means that most of our projects don't get finished. And it means an awful lot of our projects don't get started either. So what we are trying to do is basically to do everything and to do it well. So the other garage, the other auto repair shop, instead of reacting to everything, they simply book it in. So you want your car serviced, you call up the garage, they tell you they can't do it until Tuesday next week. So you say, okay, book me in. And they know that they've got a gap which they can fit you in on Tuesday. And they know how many cars approximately they can deal with each day. And the result is that it's done in an orderly way. And basically, everyone gets their car serviced, and they get it serviced on time. So there's none of the sort of rushing around that one gets with Joe Slob. Now, which of these two auto repair shops is going to service the most vehicles? My bet is that it will be the well-organized one.
Right, but surprisingly enough, most people use the first strategy. They just deal with things at first come, first serves strategy, right? And email probably it's the culprit here, because emails are always popping in to your inbox, and if you look at them, there's always a task that you it seems that you need to do it immediately, right? And the second strategy requires a lot more thinking, and most people go with the first one just because it's probably easier to just go with the flow in that way, right?
Well, the problem with one of the problems with dealing with things immediately, like email popping up in your inbox, mm-hmm. is that you don't actually deal with all of it immediately. What you do is you deal with some of it immediately and leave the rest to be dealt with later.
Right.
So you're interrupting what you're doing, whatever it is you are doing, whatever project you're working on, to fiddle around answering a few emails. So your attention is getting distracted. But you don't answer all the emails. You answer some of them. What happens to the other ones? Well, you're going to do them later. When's later? Well, you haven't defined it. So you haven't parked these things in a safe place where they're going to be dealt with methodically. And when do they actually get dealt with? Well, it may be tomorrow, it may be next week, it may be 2 years' time, it may be never. We don't know.
Right. Okay. So how this idea of writing down everything, that is very central. You recommend that in the very beginning of your book and then come back to it over and over again. It's probably related to the idea of getting the rational brain take charge of things.
Yeah.
Right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. One of the things which we tend to do is sort of putter around. We have all sorts of impulses coming in, some of them from outside, like telephone calls or emails, whatever it is. But there's also quite a few impulses coming up in our brain just of their own accord. So while I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, I'll go make another cup of tea. I really need to tidy my desk a bit. And, I've got to send an email off to Bill. And my attention is constantly going from one thing to another. Now, this is a problem because it's very distracting. And because if we actually take action on these things, then it's going to distract us from what we're supposed to be doing. And I'm supposed to be talking to you. If I'm trying to write my emails at the same time that I'm talking to you, it's not going to be a very good interview. I've been known to do things like that. So this sort of constant mental jumping doesn't do us any favors. But on the other hand, some of the ideas I'm getting may be quite good ideas. So I do need to write an email to Bill. And the wonderful idea which just popped into my head about some new way of advertising things on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to lose that idea. Now, the tendency is that we either do it immediately or we lose it, as I was saying earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, simply by writing it down, we've captured it. And it's also important not just to write it down on a post-it note and stick it on the edge of our computer where we can avoid looking at it for months, but to actually write it down in a place which is kept for that purpose. Now, I advise, if you've read the book, you will know that, I advise keeping a task diary. And I keep it in an ordinary page-a-day diary, or schedule, as the Americans call it. And what I do is I write most of these things down for the following day. In other words, I'm not going to do anything about them today, because I'm just putting them in an orderly queue so that I can deal with them in an orderly manner as part of a batch the next day. That's imposing order on them. And just because I've written it down doesn't necessarily mean I've got to do it. Some of these things I may think, oh, well, no, that's no good, and just cross it off. Now, there's another advantage to using the task diary, in that some things, obviously, are quite urgent and need to be dealt with today, not tomorrow. And my rule is that if something needs to be dealt with today, I write it down under today's date. Mm-hmm. So when I'm going to write something down, say you asked me to send you an email with some information in it. Okay, so I'm going to write this down. Provide information for Jose. So I have to look at my task diary and say to myself, am I going to write it down under today's date or am I going to write it down under tomorrow's date? Now, I've got to make a rational decision. That's forcing me to make a rational decision. I've got to think about it. Just how urgent is this thing? And I'll probably write it down under tomorrow's date. So the act of writing things into the task diary actually forces you to decide exactly what priority it is.
Maybe we should talk about time management drop-offs, because it looks like there are people around the internet reporting that it's really difficult to stick to one time management system. But do you have any advice in general to really stick to the system of choice that you are using?
Yes, I think I do. I think what one has to realize is that most people who are bad at time management, and that certainly has applied to me in the past, have got that way over a long period. Mm-hmm. And it's a long period of basically establishing bad habits. Mm-hmm. So you get into bad habits like not putting things in the right place, not dealing with things methodically, breaking off bad habit of not sticking to one thing but breaking off and doing something else. These are all bad habits. Mm-hmm. You know, they're habits. Now, we all know how difficult it is to break a habit. If you ever try to give up smoking or any other sort of habit, simply because in your brain, easiest for the charge to flow down that path. And so it is difficult to break a habit, even a simple habit. Now, therefore, it takes time to build up new habits. And I can't stress that enough. You can't just suddenly decide, oh, from today I'm going to deal with getting things done, I'm going to implement that system, and everything will be a bed of roses from now on. Because you've got all the force of your previous habits pulling you in the wrong direction.
Right.
You've got to establish this as a habit. And to establish things as a habit, you've got to practice it. Now, a lot of people try these things out, they work very well for a couple of days, and then they start going wrong, and they say, oh, it doesn't work, and they give it up. Well, they're neglecting the obvious fact that they haven't practiced it.
Right, right. I think this is going to be really enlightening for most people doing the donation code get organized experiment, because people report that, well, it's not working for me, I don't know what to do, but it's just really, it's very evident to me right now that we're dealing with a habit, and a habit is really difficult to break. So, yeah.
Yes, and of course, one of the problems is with an experiment like yours is that you're asking people to try out one system, then to try out another.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually making them break off in the middle of learning one system and getting into a habit of it and changing into another one.
Right.
Good reasons for doing that, but I'm just saying that it's not the best thing you can do in order to get yourself into a good habit.
Well, that's very good advice. I think that's going to be very useful in the future, the way people are going to take the experiment after listening to this interview, definitely.
One of the things which I quite often stress, I've written several articles about it, is a principle called overlearning.
Uh-huh.
You have to, it's not enough just to learn something. You have to learn it until it becomes second nature. And a very good example of overlearning is in the old days, you used to communicate by Morse code, yes?
Mm-hmm.
You used to have telegraph operators who used to be able to knock out Morse code at enormous speeds. And I'm old enough to actually remember Morse code. And when people were learning to become Morse code operators, they would tend to get stuck around the sort of at a certain level. And they couldn't, however much they practiced, they couldn't get beyond it. And what was causing this was the simple fact that there were some letters of the Morse code alphabet which they didn't know as well as others. So every time they came to these letters, they had to just momentarily think about it. And the remedy for this was actually to get them to practice these difficult letters until they knew them as well as they knew the others. Mm-hmm. And once they knew all the letters equally, they could then really power forward in increasing their speed at Morse code. So they had to overlearn all the letters until they were complete second nature, all of them. It's exactly the same when you're learning anything like a time management system. You have to practice it until it becomes second nature. So you have to practice writing things down. You have to practice getting started first thing in the morning. You have, you know, you actually have to set these things as exercises for yourself.
Should we talk about one common problem that many academics talk about, and that is that they don't have long blocks of time to dedicate to one activity, because they have a class in 1 hour time, or there is always some meeting they have to go to, and they don't have, say, 6 hours continuous, a block of time of 6 hours that they could dedicate to just finishing a task that it's pending. And they all complain about the lack of continuous blocks of time to allocate to task.
Yes. This is a problem if you make it into a problem. But in fact, having breaks in your work is not always a bad thing, because if you know, for instance, that you've got to give a class at 4 o'clock, and you've got, say, what should we say, a couple of hours, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock is free. The fact that you know you've got to stop at 4 o'clock in order to give a class actually concentrates your work during that period. Because if you didn't have that class and you basically have your time unscheduled until whatever time you finish at night, there's no real motivation for getting a move on. And so what tends to happen when you don't have any definite stopping period is that your mind tends to wander, you tend to take it a bit easy, you fiddle-faddle around, and you probably don't actually get much more done in the end, you know, for 4 hours than you would have in 2 hours if you'd had the definite stopping time. So there's another important advantage too. I mean, academics, presumably, you're talking about writing a paper or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You have to sit down, you have to write a paper. That takes a bit of time. Well, I'm sure you've noticed that if you stop writing your paper at 4 o'clock and you come back to it at 6 o'clock after the class, your thoughts have moved on.
Yeah, definitely.
You've got a different perspective on it. It may only be a subtle difference, but the fact is that having a break and then coming back to it allows your mind to make more connections. It allows your mind to assimilate what you've done up to then and crystallize it and go on beyond it. And the principle of little and often is one which is used a lot in education. You know, if you're learning the piano and you have a lesson once a week, your piano teacher will probably say to you, now, don't save all your practice up for the night before the next lesson. Do a little bit every day. That's little and often. Because doing a little bit every day allows your mind, and indeed your body in the case of piano practice, to assimilate what you have learned in the previous practice.
So I really want to thank you for just being so generous with your time, and I'm sure our listeners at Donation Coder and AcademicProductivity.com are going to really appreciate the bits and pieces that you mentioned. Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure, and I very much enjoyed interacting with people on the website as well in the forum.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Mark.
If you'd like to learn more about Mark Forster's work, you can visit the Getting Organized Experiment section of the DonationCoder.com forum, or you can visit Mark's website, which is www.markforster.net. That's markforster.net. And we'll see you next month.